It was foggy enough that I probably wouldn't have had to close my eyes, but I did anyway. My wife and I live right along Governor Dodge State Park.
Okay.
And we're also on the Friends of Governor Dodge board. So I have a real interest in DNR.
I can tell you're itch.
And funding.
And how are we doing? How are we doing right now? So I served for 3 years. As the secretary of DOA, and my colleague there who ran the DNR at that time was Preston Cole, who had served on the board, and there are lots of ways in which the legislature can slow and stop things there, but how are we doing, when you had...
On the You're not doing well. Let's
okay, all right.
The Parks are under fire. To get staff, rangers, wardens, etc. There's a lot of movement there. I think part of it is maybe salaries. I know salaries aren't the fix.
So you're with the Friends, that burden falls on you to raise money.
Not at this level.
You could use a different name for it, but some people might.
So let me introduce Joel. You can come back.
Anyway, so I got lots of needs and questions.
Okay, all right.
So, hello.
There we go.
Between the news feed and the weather, I feel more like we're in the wild dark yonder than the wild blue yonder today. But I've worked with a lot of amazing people over my 4 decades of being a Wisconsin lawyer. And I've either worked with or know 4 of the leading candidates for the Democratic ticket for governor in the state. And I'm pleased to say that right at the very top of the list of my most esteemed, enjoyed, liked colleagues is Joel Brennan. Most talented, moral backbone, a great leader, cares about the entire state, not just the urban areas, cares about areas like this. And I got a great sense of Joel from working in the Department of Administration, which I think a lot of people, maybe he'll talk to it, I never appreciated how that's really the center part of our state governments, where all the tax money flows through. Joel is responsible for doing the biennial budget of almost $112 billion. It's a lot of responsibility, but I hope and think that as you get to know Joel starting today, you'll agree with me. He's the best qualified and the best candidate. So please join me in welcoming who I hope and think will be the next Democratic governor of Wisconsin.
Thank you very much, Mike. And I'm going to talk a little bit about myself, not necessarily the subject I like to talk about all that much, but I'm also here to listen and to respond to questions from you. But I hope one of the things you'll take away from me is that relationships really matter. And the fact that I got the chance to work with Mike for a couple of years in Madison after a distinguished career that he has had as a lawyer, and the work that he did, which I can talk more about, that relationship means something to me. I also want you to know some of you may get a chance to get introduced to my staff who are here today. Sarah Abel, who's our campaign manager, is right here. Sarah just came on board in the last several days. And so Sarah and I haven't known each other that long. But the person who's driving me today is Jim Wilkinson over here in the corner. And Jim was my high school baseball coach a few years ago. And Jim probably, and so I've known Jim about as long as Mike has been doing Birkebeiners, which is I think 39 years, right, that you have done that. And if you want to talk to Jim about my athletic prowess and my athletic career, he will tell you that the only thing that kept me from being just a Major League Baseball player was the fact that I couldn't hit. So he probably remembers both of the hits that I got in high school. But the fact that I was yesterday, I needed somebody to spend part of a day with me, and that I could reach back to somebody who I've known for 40 years and who has helped to to bring people together over the course of that time and had a distinguished career in education. I hope that said something about me, but it says a hell of a lot about somebody like Jim. So thank you for coming with me today. And as Mike said, I'm a candidate for governor, and I'm just going to start with one fact that I think we can all agree on, and that we don't live in normal times. We don't live in normal times nationally, in the state of Wisconsin, in Iowa County, in Mineral Point. Like, these are not days that we all know and that we recognize. When I go around the state, and I've spent lots of time traveling over the couple of months that I've been in this campaign, people are anxious. They're angry, they're concerned about what's going on with their neighbors and what's happening in their communities, the threats that are being done, government being weaponized against communities, against citizens. It's just not something that I think that we know and that we think is who we should be in the chaotic times that we live in. And so, so the question is not whether these are heavy times and whether there are things that are of great concern. The question is, what are we going to do about it? And I would say that for some people, they get angry and they look for revenge. They get angry and they want to get even. I'm somebody who I am angry about the situation that's happening federally. I'm angry about some of the stuff that happens locally here in our state of Wisconsin, the state we love. But when I get angry, I want to do something about it. I don't want to get even. I want to roll up my sleeves and get something done. And that's lessons that I learned growing up in a family that's been in Wisconsin for five generations. My parents taught me and my 10 siblings, I'm the 10th of 11 kids, but my parents taught us some fairly basic lessons. Show up, invest in your community, solve problems. When you see injustice, do something about it. Those are the kind of lessons that my wife Audra and I have tried to teach to our young adult children. We have two children who are 18 and 20 years old. And for 25 years, what I've done is try to solve problems in the work that I've done, generally in executive positions, in the nonprofit sector, in government, working with businesses around our state. So that's what I have been over the course of 25 years. And in 2018, when Tony Evers was elected governor, you remember those times. We came out of 8 years of Scott Walker and people in the legislature who I think were not standing up for Wisconsin values. And there were lots of things that we had to and we were forced to try to fix in state government. I was honored that Governor Evers asked me to be his top appointed cabinet official as the Secretary of the Department of Administration. He offered me that job in 2018, and starting in January 2019, we rolled up our sleeves and we got to work. And over the course of the first year or two in office, we were able to fix some of that fiscal challenge and the fiscal mess that Scott Walker had left behind. We created the largest budget surplus to that point of about $4 billion. We took a rainy day fund, appropriate to talk about a rainy day fund on a day like today, but we took the state's rainy day fund that had about $200 million in it, and we grew it to almost $2 billion. And so we did some of those things. We created stability around the state, we stood up to extremists, and we were able, during the course of COVID, the worst economic and public health crisis that we had in 100 years, to take Wisconsin and actually have it emerge stronger from COVID than where we went in. And so, I'm proud of the work that we did there. And there are lessons that we learned then, and I think that apply to today, especially in the era that we live of Donald Trump. And that's, it's easy to break things in government. It's easy to take things and make and do away with them. It's easy to divide people. It's easy to, break things that we know and institutions that we have long embraced. Much harder to get things to work better and to get government to actually work for people. But that's the governor's job. That's what the job is all about. And that's who I have been over the course of those 25 years. And frankly, that's why I'm running. And I think Wisconsin deserves and needs a government in these dangerous and dark times who knows how to get things done, who knows that we have opportunities. You're in a legislative district that for many years wasn't one that anybody could say was very competitive. We have opportunities to do things here with the legislature. One of the great legacies that Governor Evers has left us is fair maps where you get to decide who's going to represent you, as opposed to politicians drawing maps to decide who they want to represent them. And I think that's a positive of where we have gotten in Wisconsin. And there are very specific things that a governor can do that have an impact on your lives. And I want to talk about some. And the first, you know, no matter where you go around this state and wherever you are in your community, it's about how do we afford the things that we need to be able to put on our kitchen table. And you know, healthcare is among the biggest of those. Over the course of the last 12 years, while other states, 40 other states have expanded Medicaid, expanded what we call Badger Care in Wisconsin, we have not done that. We've spent about $2.5 billion of our tax money to cover our own citizens that otherwise we could have gotten from the federal government. As we were still, you know, having people all around us, as we were helping cover people in Iowa and Illinois and Minnesota, we were spending $2.5 billion of our own money to cover people in Wisconsin. With the legislative, with the fair maps that have been created, with a few more allies in the legislature, and with a governor who knows how to navigate that process, that's one of the first things that we can do. That $2.5 billion would go a long way towards other reforms and other things that we need to invest in, but that time is done. We need to be able to move forward. In addition, on the issue of healthcare, you know, Washington is probably not coming to help us in many ways in the next few years. That's an understatement of the day. But if Washington's not going to do things like, you know, when it comes to prescription drugs, we can do things here as a state. We can cap the cost of insulin for families. There's no reason why parents ought to go to bed every night thinking whether they're going to go buy the prescriptions that their kids need or put groceries on the table. And that's what we have put people in. In this part of the state and in others, there are healthcare deserts. There are, you know, expectant mothers who have to drive hours for their prenatal care or to deliver their baby. I was with my sister who was driving me last week. She's an obstetrician who's delivered about 12,000 babies. Most of them in Illinois, and a lot of them are Bear fans, so please don't hold that against her. But we were talking as she and I drove from Green Bay across the state to La Crosse. When I started in state government, there were 20 counties that didn't have a practicing OBGYN. Now there's like 27. And some of those are counties that you are familiar with. And this is the state of affairs that we are leaving things in for healthcare in our state. And so we need to invest both in the pipeline of people to take those jobs. We also need to make sure that we are doing right by those providers and ensuring that people who need that care can get it in Wisconsin. So, you know, healthcare is a huge issue. Another issue, and I was just talking to somebody who helps build homes here and work them. Housing is an issue no matter where you go, and young families especially are facing a crisis in that. You know, in Wisconsin and elsewhere around the country, in 2020, the average age for a first-time home buyer was 33 years old. Last year, it was 40 years old. So in the course of 5 years, we have taken, you know, a generation and made it much harder for them to own homes. And you all know, because you live here, you know what that means for stability in communities, what it means to your education system, just what it means to the fabric of the society that we want to have. But we have put that out of reach. And so, you know, in many places around the state, part of the problem is that Wall Street firms have come in and they've bought up, whether it's single family homes or multifamily homes, they've jacked up rents so that it makes it harder. It helps their bottom line, but it makes it harder and harder for people in our communities to be able to access housing. The other aspect of this is, in large part, it's a supply problem too. We are underbuilt in Wisconsin by about 70,000 homes, 70,000 kind of entry-level homes, and we need to make sure that we can invest in ensuring that Wisconsin builders make it as easy as possible to build with the cooperation and the coordination that happens at the local level, because a lot of those are local decisions, but that we also give young Wisconsin families and people who want to be homeowners tools that they have, whether it's home buyer assistance programs or counseling or down payment assistance. There are programs that we had at the Department of Administration that Mike and I worked at that are spending a couple $1 million that could have huge impact with just an increase in those things. So there's ways that we can continue to move our communities forward by increasing the supply of housing in thoughtful ways. But if we want to be the state that we want and need to be, we also need to invest in public education. We need to have the best schools. And I know there are people here who have worked in the school district and who have committed their lives to it. And I served for 11 years as the CEO of Discovery World, which is the largest science museum in the state. And I got the chance over that to see thousands of kids have their eyes open to what their future might look like in STEM education or in careers related to that. And, you know, and so the problem is not the promise of those kids. The problem is we have politicians who for 30 years have neglected a formula that really doesn't make any sense. It was built in the mid-1990s, and it doesn't make sense for who and where we are in 2026. And so, you know, you may have seen that just in the last week, a set of parents, school districts, educators, filed suit up in Eau Claire to try to get this declared unconstitutional. And, you know, it's for the courts to decide, and it may take a couple of years for them to do that. But the remedy for this is to have a governor and a legislature with the courage and the backbone to say, we need to put kids first, give teachers what they need in their classrooms, and stop forcing local communities to go to referendum just to keep the lights on. Like, that's the situation that we have been in Wisconsin for the last several years. And again, no matter what they say about whether it's unconstitutional, it's unconscionable that this is what we afford and this is what we abide for our schools. And that's something that the legislature and the governor have the power to change moving forward and immediately. That one last issue, and I want to welcome your questions, but you can't now be who we are and where we are and not think about what's going on at the federal level right now. And you know, lots of you are working on democracy and protecting democracy, and I don't take Donald Trump seriously. I mean, I take him very seriously, but I don't know that we can trust him at his word on a lot of things. But when he talks about doing things like nationalizing elections, when Steve Bannon says that they're going to surround polling places with ICE, we better take that absolutely dead serious. And those are things that we absolutely need to do. Now, I don't know about you, but there's one day in my life that I truly thought that my vote was at risk and maybe that our republic was at risk. You know what that date was? January 6, 2021. I know you all agree with me on that. So the idea that they are somehow protecting our votes is, you know, beneath who we are, and they are protecting the votes of the people who they want to vote, not for who the rest of us are and what democracy has meant over the last 250 years. And so, you know, if Donald Trump wants to come after Wisconsin rights, Wisconsin resources, Wisconsin voters, he's going to have to come through me and all of you. And I know we're going to courageously stand up for those things. I have, over the course of the last several weeks, put out a plan that I think are five or six steps that we can take to protect our democracy, to ensure that people who are working in local elections have the right resources that they need, reforms that allow them to get a chance to do some things before the elections start. And if necessary, like we did in 2020, bring out our National Guard members who are our neighbors and friends, not in uniform, but to sit side by side with our local citizens to make sure that we have the free, fair elections that we know have been the hallmark of Iowa County, of Wisconsin, for the last 200 years here, the last 250 years in the democracy. So this is, I think, who we have to be. So, you know, I guess I'd close and I'd be welcome to take your questions, but, you know, there are, and Mike said, he knows lots of the candidates who are running. All of you may know some of the other candidates are running. You're not going to hear me say a bad word about those candidates. They're all good people, all people that I have worked with. But what I would tell you is that, you know, if you're looking for someone who I think listens to people around the state, who has managed significant budgets, who has been in tough negotiations, stood up to extremists, and who actually rolls up his sleeve to get stuff done, that is who I am. And that's what I've done over the course of 25 years, and I think that's what you deserve in the next governor, and that's who I would like to be. Now, elections are always about decisions, whether you're going to move forward, whether we're going to move forward in ensuring that we can bring down costs for people who need that, if we can improve our education system, if we can stand up for our democracy when we know that it's at risk, or we slide backwards into more chaos, more division, and really a republic that we know and we think is at risk. But I'm still somebody who's an optimist. I love our state of Wisconsin. I love the people who are here. I believe in them. I think that our strongest and best days of us are ahead of us, but we better be willing to fight for that. And that's who I am. That's why I'm running for governor. It'd be the honor of my life to be your governor, and I would welcome the chance and the opportunity to do that. He's got the hat on, so I say, on Wisconsin. And so I'm happy to take questions if people have them here. If they're really hard questions, that's why Mike is here.
You're a lawyer.
But again, if you have stuff on your mind or stuff I didn't talk to, or even just things that are the case. I got here, I don't often get places early, but I got here a little early today. So Desiree, who's had her shop across the street for 34 years or something like that, I got to sit and chat with her for a minute. If you're going into a community that's got a Ben Franklin, I stop in the Ben Franklin. And I know that, so I gotten a little bit of on the ground view of what's going on, but that's part of why I'm here and what I can get from you as I'm going elsewhere. So please either share what's going on or ask me questions. Yeah.
Well, this isn't so much a policy question as more of a campaign question. Mm-hmm. So what is your plan for closing the recognition gap that was, on the TV a few days ago about, what even state Democrats know about the current candidates? And, I don't put a lot of emphasis on those early polls, but you must be aware of them. So what is your plan?
Yeah, and just a little bit about that poll. And again, I'm not going to speak about the rest of the candidates, but I would tell you that if I changed my name to undecided, I'd be winning this thing going away, because 65% of the people had said that they were undecided, and I only got a few percentage points in the poll. But the leaders were at like 10 and 11. So the bottom line for the statewide poll, very credible, is that almost nobody has made up their mind about this, and it's a wide open race. And so what do I do about that? Like, there are a couple of things. One, somebody asked me about money in politics, and if I could squeeze money out of this and just have it be about going around and talking to people around the state, I would do that. Unfortunately, we have to make sure that we have resources to do this. And one of the areas which I think I established credibility for myself and my campaign is, I declared for governor on December 11th. It would have been my mother's 97th birthday. So I thought that was fitting. But between December 11th, and there was a report that had to be filed as of December 31st. So there are other candidates that have been in the race for 3 months. I had 3 weeks. And in those 3 weeks, I was able to raise about a little less than $600,000, which put me right about at the same with these other candidates who had been in the race for 3 months. And so, that was one area to demonstrate that the relationships that I have had and cultivated over a 35-year career can be translated into resources immediately. And I think that put me on a par with some of the other candidates. What we have to do, I continue every day, my campaign manager is over in the corner. I'm raising money and she has me on the phone every day. We're doing events all around the state. Last week, as an example, I spent Monday in Green Bay, Tuesday in La Crosse, Wednesday in Madison, Fitchburg, and Stoughton, Thursday in Wausau. Tomorrow I'll be in Sheboygan and in Rock County. I am spending my time going all around, making sure that we have those resources. And I would hope to think that part of what the reason why I can make progress on that are people like Mike, because you are here hopefully because you're interested, you're engaged, you have had opportunities to talk to other candidates as well, and you're deeply engaged in your community. But I have credibility because Mike says I'm a decent guy, and because he says that you should...
Or Susan. Least,
yeah, and Susan,
yeah,
too. Hey,
yeah. Don't forget me.
Yeah, they both do. But like, that credibility, and I have had the ability to connect with... some of the people who are supporting me are people who have been very close to Herb Kohl, to Jim Doyle, to Tony Evers, people who have helped build what the Democratic Party has been over the last 25 years. Now, we need to build a new party, but it's a great foundation to build on, and I have credibility from some of those relationships, and I think that gives me some opportunity moving forward. But so for the last 4 years, my job has been, after I left the Evers administration, I run a civic organization in southeastern Wisconsin called the Greater Milwaukee Committee. And so it's all about relationships and bringing people together to work on issues related to public education, public safety, infrastructure, all of those things. I took a leave of absence from that role, and this is what I'm doing exclusively. I am going every day out to talk to people and to hear from people all around the state. It's the only way that I know how. And so it's a mix of those resources, it's a mix of a message, but it's also ensuring that I get a chance to listen to what people are saying out in those places as well. Good. Other questions? Yeah.
When I first started at state government, my task was to help right-size this huge, crazy project called Foxconn. And my biggest ally in the whole administration was this man. And the vision was to take $3 billion of state-funded infrastructure and drive it into small projects scattered around the state. And why don't you, I know people here care deeply about kind of rural economic development and that.
Yeah, and that's a good example of the way things were done in the Walker administration. And when we hired Mike, you know, people may think that Governor Evers walking in thought Foxconn was this thing that he absolutely, you know, didn't believe in and wanted to get rid of. To be honest, there was so little known about it that he, like lots of us, wanted to know actually what was happening with it. And so one of my main jobs, the job that he gave me, one of the many that I got in the first year of the administration, was find out if there's any there. And what we found out was that they were much better at producing press releases than they were ever going to be at producing flat screen televisions, and that this was something that was supposed to be, you know, 20 million square feet were just going to like magically fall into Racine County, and 13,000 people were going to magically be employed there, and like it just, there was no attachment to reality. And so Mike was very instrumental, along with others, of navigating our way out of the obligations that the state had had there. We were not popular amongst some of those people on the other side. And when I talk about how we negotiate or what we have to do as tough negotiators, they had what they thought was an ironclad commitment, and we needed to tell them that that wasn't something, if they couldn't live up to that, we needed to make sure that we did things differently. And so, you know, I also sat on the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation board, and to its credit, and my colleague Missy Hughes is another candidate, we tried to make sure that that was not an organization, and economic development in Wisconsin wasn't just that we could take big, huge companies and give them a little bit more to make them just a little bit bigger. You know, now that was really what had been developed over the Walker administration, was let's see if we can give tools so that the really big employers can be a little bit bigger. And that doesn't help for what you have out here on your main street. It doesn't help for most places around the state of Wisconsin. And so we moved some of those resources around, and I think we are better prepared to do that. But there's one other area that I would say that we really demonstrated that you can do that with public resources, and that was during COVID. We were responsible during COVID for about $4.5 billion of federal support coming to the state of Wisconsin, and most of that came through the Department of Administration. We led the nation in getting that out to small businesses, to family farms, to people who were having trouble keeping a roof over their head. And that was not an ideological exercise, and that wasn't a place where we said it had to go to the urban areas or rural areas. There were people hurting, and we needed to make sure that we were able to meet their immediate needs, and that's what we did. And I'll tell you, if I get to be the nominee here, and you know, and there's a general election, I guarantee you that I will be criticized for what we did during COVID of getting those dollars out, because you know, somebody will say you didn't keep the right paperwork, or you know, you didn't do this in triplicate. And you know what I'll say is like, yep, I wanted to get those money into the hands of Wisconsin residents as quickly as possible. If you want to blame me for that, guilty as charged. Like, you know, you do what you want. But that's what we have to do when we're in times of crisis, but that's also who we need to be when it's not a crisis. And so, you know, we have tools at our disposal. Some of those tools have not been utilized to the extent that they need to. We need to make sure that there's certainty when it comes to how we deploy these. We need to make sure that there is fairness about how we deploy these around the state. And it can't just be in the urban centers. It can't just be places and companies that you know. There, you know, the fact that I got to hear from Desiree across the street, like that's still where people talk to each other. She, and I hope you would all agree, she said she's not a gossip. She knows more than most anybody in the community, but she ain't telling. But that's still who we are, and that's who I think we want to be. We need to invest in those places. And you know, I think you as taxpayers, you as people who believe in your communities, like this is who we should be. Yeah.
So speaking of the Walker...
Oh, you moved, didn't you? You
yes.
moved from there to here. Okay.
The Walker administration, and still recovering from that, we had the president, whose name was Barack Obama, who made a contract for, who helped us in Wisconsin to create high-speed rail between Chicago, Milwaukee, Madison, the Twin Cities, and we never got that because of our lovely new governor, Walker, who wouldn't take any federal money.
Yep.
And then built a gazillion highways in Milwaukee that didn't help us at all. And we are still not connected very easily to Milwaukee, to Chicago, to the Twin Cities.
Yep.
Is there anything, I know it's not one of the top priority questions right now since we're recovering from all the pain inflicted by the federal government right now, but it seems like it would be a great thing to reestablish some high-speed
rails. I agree, and you know, that may have been the first step in the Scott Walker for President campaign, because there were people in Florida and California who were thrilled that Wisconsin didn't spend that money, you know, on that high-speed rail, and he did us a disservice. And you know, and I think what we need is there needs to be a multimodal approach to you know, to whatever we do in infrastructure. You know, there's been over the course of the last several years, I would say that the Department of Transportation under Tony Evers, and these were colleagues of mine, has been more transparent, more inviting of community input than what we have had in the past. But it doesn't mean it's perfect. We still, you know, are very much more focused on highways than we are on any kind of transit. You know, and whether it's in local communities, large or small, there are formulas that the state uses that we have really underfunded for many years. And, you know, we penalize people for driving more fuel-efficient cars, because the main way that we pay for our transportation is on gas taxes. So if you're, you know, that stands to reason. If you're using less gas, then we have to penalize you. We have to charge you more. Like, that's not, I think, the kind of incentives that we should have. So I believe, you know, it's now been, 15 years since Tom Friedman wrote the book about The World is Flat, maybe longer than that. You know, the fact that we still can't get enough out of the connection between Milwaukee, Madison, La Crosse, the Twin Cities, you know, when other areas around the globe are looking at themselves as one central region, yeah. we lose because of that. And so, you know, the investments we make there and who we can be are something I'd like to make a priority of. But I have to tell you, like, that is a little bit, the first issue that people bring up right now is, can they afford their housing? They're paying too much for medical care. They you know, there are some who can't have insurance. And I'll give you, because we're now in a coffee shop and bakery like this, an experience I had in a conversation with two people who worked in a bakery just a week or so ago. One's 24 years old, one's 30 years old, and you may know where this is going. The 24-year-old, I asked them both about healthcare. 24-year-old said, I'm okay because I'm still on my parents' health insurance. Yeah. Thanks to Tammy Baldwin and what she did during the Affordable Care Act. The 30-year-old, he's generally healthy, but he's rolling the dice and he can't afford to have health insurance right now. And this is what we are now condemning young people to, is like hoping that they're going to stay healthy, changing some of their life activities because they don't have the ability and to gain health insurance. And it's not just young people. There are, you know, married couples and families around the state who have, because of what the mean-spirited and ill-thought things that happened at the end of the last year, where things have just mushroomed in terms of cost of healthcare. And this is who we are, and we better be prepared to do that. And we better be prepared in whatever way we can to do those things as a state, as opposed to waiting on the federal government to help us, because I just don't think that you're going to see them as a great partner. The fact that, you know, that big bill took out about almost $1 trillion of Medicaid spending mm-hmm. over the next 10 years, that's not Washington on its way to help. That's Washington hurting Wisconsin families, and we better be prepared to do whatever we can to stand up against that. Another candidate, by the way. You know, I want to make sure that when I come, you know, that great. We have great candidates running.
Thank you so much. I have about 10 questions for you, but I'm going to spare everybody in the room. The public education model, how we fund it in yep. the state of Wisconsin, relies heavily on property owners and property taxes. As I'm out talking to folks and they see the downward spiral of their public schools, I have been reassuring them there are other ways that we could fund our public schools in the state of Wisconsin. The voucher program seems to be a sore spot with regard to the people who even know about it.
Yep.
Most taxpayers don't even realize that the money on their real estate tax bill doesn't necessarily stay in their district. In a nutshell, you're the governor. How would you address the way the state of Wisconsin funds its public education system?
Yeah, and just as a precursor, let me tell you, I didn't tell you exactly everywhere I'd been this week, because I was in Houstisburg, which is in Dodge County.
Yeah.
And I was there because there was a public meeting on Monday, because Hustisford, the school district, run a deficit in the last 5 years, has a negative fund balance, has borrowed already $1 million from the state trust, wants to borrow up to $4 million more. And this in a community of 1,100 people, there were 200 people at this meeting in the gym at the high school, because their two most viable options are to consolidate with another district around or to dissolve. They'd be the first Wisconsin school district in the last 35 years to actually dissolve. Now, the state has something to say about that. They can decide to do this, but the state ultimately has to grant them the ability to do it. Like, this is, and I didn't mention, there's a referendum on the ballot for about $3.5 million over the next 2 years that, if it goes the same way as has happened in Hustisford over the last several years, will fail. Again, like, they have not been able to pass that. And so this is what we are laying out for people. So what would I do as governor? I mentioned there is a lawsuit that's been filed by teachers' unions, by administrators, by parents in Eau Claire, and it's a whole bunch of districts that have gotten to the point of just this being not tolerable anymore, to declare the funding formula unconstitutional. But the funding formula, I swear to you, is a snapshot that was taken in 1993. You know, anybody a fan of the Jurassic Park movies? You know, I think the first Jurassic Park movie was made in 1993. They've made like 7 more since then. But we are still, and you know, that may be laughable, but what is a criminal is that we still are using that formula. And that formula was a snapshot, not of what every kid was worth or what you're doing, it's what you had spent the year before. And they locked in that, and over the course of the last 30 plus years have tried to kind of somehow bail that together to be relevant and coherent for 2026, and it's not. And so, you know, if this lawsuit is successful, the two remedies, just as happened in the case related to the legislative maps, the two remedies would be that they appoint a special master who says, here's what you've got to do, or the legislature and the governor got up, do what's courageous, and they make the decision that we're going to put kids at the center. This is the rest of what we need to do. If somebody's an English language learner, if they have an IEP, if there are other special needs, like, this is the formula. And other states have done this. We simply haven't had the courage to do that over the last 30 years, and it's past time for us to do. And that's why I say, you know, if you're in the legislature alongside me, if we can turn this district, if we can do a few more like that, there will be both the values and the people there who can take on these tough issues that I think have been ignored. And, you know, and I have two kids. They are no longer in the school system. They're off in college now. But they're the products of the Milwaukee Public Schools, of the work that they did in a private school in high school. And they're going to be successful because of what they have done and what they learned in school. I'm here with somebody who taught me 40 years ago in school. Like, we need to be investing in kids and creating that kind of a level of relationship and a path forward for them. And we're not going to get there under what we've got now. And so, you know, there are ways. And you mentioned, like, the voucher program. There's dangers that lurks ahead with that. That, you know, in the next year, if we do nothing, the cap is lifted on the statewide voucher program. There's, you know, much less accountability, almost no accountability in some cases for the voucher schools versus the public schools in our state. The largest recipient of voucher funding in the state of Wisconsin is really, like, almost now a virtual school. And they found a loophole to get $40 million of tax money that goes into this. And like, even people I know who are supporters of that program, they don't believe that this is a way that we can educate our kids. So we need to do things that are viable, that are, you know, that we can get through the legislature, but that are ensuring that we're protecting the future for kids who go to public schools in Wisconsin.
That's right. Thank you.
Yeah.
With data centers expanding across Wisconsin and people's citizens scrambling for information on the transparency of these transactions, can you, offer an opinion on what role the state government or the PSC should have in the regulation of data centers? And two, can you offer instruction or directions for citizens who want that transparency and who might want to organize against this sort of construction of these facilities?
Yep. And you'll remind me if I don't get both questions. You'll remind me of the second. But the one about the state government's responsibility, you know, what happened was, and data centers have exploded nationally in the last few years. And Wisconsin, a couple of years ago, passed a tax credit, which is almost like the table stakes. If you're a state that wanted to get into the data center game, this is the one thing you had to do. And I, you know, it's there's economic opportunity, and I don't fault them for doing that. But what they didn't do is put any other guardrails around what that looks like. And so, you know, what I have said is that in the if I'm elected governor, we would pause the data center construction for at least the few months that it takes for us to deal with it, because this is an issue that's on the mind of every citizen around the state. And what we need to do is we need to say to the companies that are building these, one, you know, if there's a red line, it's that no taxpayer is going to pay for the construction, the operation, the long-term maintenance of these, that there are environmental and sustainability standards that need to be met, that there are requirements that have to be met at the local community, and that locals need to have their voice in this. So, like, we need to set that bar and make sure that it's a predictable thing no matter where you are. Like, that's the state's responsibility. And our responsibility is not, because the companies that want to do this, they have a premium on speed. They said, get it done as quickly as possible. They're spending billions of dollars, and you know, and that's what's at risk. And so they want us to do it very quickly. Any of you who have worked in local or state government, sometimes we can be a little more methodical about things and intentional, and that's a good thing. And it is not, we want to be responsive, but we can't do things that are irresponsible. And so the state laying out what those guidelines are very clearly and ensuring that there is the opportunity. And the good news is, there is work that's happened in the state legislature where I think there can be some path forward about what that looks like. But the state legislature, you know, and our friend Howard Markline have generally gone home for the next 9 months, and they're going to do nothing. So we can tell you that nothing's going to happen between now and the end of the year. But you know, with a change in legislature and where we're going, we have the opportunity to do stuff immediately after the election and in January next year. The second part of your question was about what can citizens do. I think you're seeing it. Like, you know, you said there's an event this Sunday. There's an event on Tuesday. Like, there are, this is in lots of ways, you know, what's going on with the data centers, what the Trump administration has done with relation to ICE and how they've awakened people to be active in their communities. I think that's good for democracy. Now, the fact that part of it is that we're under threat is not great. We should all be able to embrace those things. But the fact that they have awakened an activism in people is to our benefit, and continuing to do that and ensuring, and again, and the state government's responsibility on this and other issues is that we not tie the hands of local government, that we don't allow there to be these NDAs that, you know, things are all but cooked before you get any knowledge of it. I think making sure that there is a process in place where there is active local voice, and where it's not wanted or warranted at the local community, it doesn't happen there. That happened in Caledonia. It happened in Greenleaf, in Outagamie County recently. There are DeForest in Dane County. And there are places that will embrace this, and there are places where, you know, the argument about the real estate support and some of the jobs that is compelling for local communities, but where it's not, then they ought to move on to somewhere else. And I think that that's entirely appropriate. That's the way the contract and the partnership between state and local government ought to work. But again, like I would say, I admire the work that has gone on. I think Jim taught at my high school. I think Charlie Behrens is a fellow classmate, a fellow alumnus. And if you know him, he's a comedian who does the Manitowoc Minute, but he's also been very involved in data centers. He's coming for this event here. Like, you know, the fact that there are people like that who can help express the environmental concerns around these, I think that's valuable. And I just think, like, there is reason, there's opportunity for citizen voice in all of this. I've never held statewide elected office. I've never held any office before. I still think that we're a citizen legislature, we're a citizen government, and we ought to be people who still have opportunity to have agency in that. And I'd like to think that that's who I would be as governor. But the fact that you're doing it already and organizing at the local level is to your credit. And that's how we established this place 250 years ago. So we better keep doing that, or it's all at risk.
It's kind of a follow-up to that. You were talking about the idea of the governor putting some kind of a process that they would pause the building for a while.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that November and consequently January, when you would be sworn in, is almost too late. So is there a possibility that Governor Evers can be approached? He's a lame duck baby.
Yep.
Can be approached to do that, to put that so that you can simply carry it on.
There is a possibility of that, and I think that you know, if I know anything about the governor, I admire him because I got the chance to work with him, and I think he is. If you know him, you know, or if you don't, like who he conveys himself to be personally is who he is. You know, above reproach when it comes to ethics and integrity. I think there's already there have been some of those efforts around him. He doesn't seem to be, I will volunteer to you, I don't know exactly what the method would be to put that pause in place, but he has not, and you can come get water here too. I'm in the middle, you know.
Are you sure?
Yes, absolutely.
This is embarrassing, but you're so kind. I love it.
Anybody else? I think he has the ability to do that. He has not expressed at this point any interest in doing that. I would encourage him to take a long look at what's going on in places around the state. And my guess is anybody who has audience with him is bringing that up to him.
Well, I also think there's a possibility for everybody in this room to send him a postcard. I sent a lot of postcards. Send him a postcard and say, you know what? This guy had a great idea. Joel had this really good idea. And what do you think? Can you get it going? And that he listens.
I'd like to think he listens. Now, here's what when I told him that I was thinking about doing this, and as you know, there are 8 viable Democrats who are running, and a number of us worked with him. A couple were lieutenant governors to him, so he knows us all. You know what he said about it is, oh yeah, this will be fun. This will be fun for me to watch. Fun for him, less fun for the rest of us. Although this is fun. It's fun to talk to you, and I think he's had the opportunity over the course of a 50-year career in public service to do lots of this. But it is, and I should have started by this too. And Mike may be about ready to give me the hook here, but I wanted to just say how valuable it is, and how much I thank you for taking the time to have conversation with me. For what you do with Indivisible Southwest, for those who are doing that work, for allowing me to rain on the knitting party for a few minutes. But that is what democracy is all about. And it only works when people participate in it, and all of you do that in your own community, and it means something around the state, but it also means something to us who are out here trying and vying to be elected leaders. So thank you for that.
I think we have one more question here.
Okay.
I know Joel wanted us to talk individually with a few people.
So thank you for all your comments. I am a retired nurse. So healthcare and education, which to me are very, very, are extremely important. And I have more of a comment than a question. Yes. I think that the Democratic Party as a whole has really shot ourselves in the foot by hammering the word abortion. I think there are many people that do not understand that a miscarriage is an abortion and oftentimes, sadly, requires medical care for the woman's health. And I just want your views on abortion rights, and I think it is unconscionable what is happening with our transgender persons in this state. And it makes me lose sleep in addition to this war that has been started all over.
Yeah. On the issue of abortion and women's health, and I think that the situation that I talked about, that we used to have 20 states that didn't have a practicing OBGYN, and that's only grown. Part of that is about the overall view and what the legislature here has done related to abortion and the Dobbs case at the national level. So I would tell you, I believe abortion is an important part of women's health care. It's a decision between a woman and her doctor. There are, with changes in the legislature, there may be ways that we can continue to improve on maternal health in lots of ways, whether it's through telehealth or some of the prescription efforts and waiting periods. So like, I am going to, from the day from now until the time that I am done with public service, believe those things, and I will work towards that with the legislature. And, you know, so, you know, those are important issues to people. It sometimes are issues that people decide just on one way or the other, and I believe that, you know, I respect people's ability to have difference of opinion on those things, but that's where I stand. When it comes to issues around the way that LGBTQ plus people are treated in our state, like, I have, in my own family, in my community, I know the richness and the talent that is in every kid and every person, and especially with young people, and I will do everything in my power to ensure that people can be who they are, where they are, and that the government has no say in that. And I think that that's just who we should be as human beings, and respect people's rights to be who they are, because there is a richness about each one of us, and it takes some of us longer to find it, and we all ought to continue to search, but it ought to be about, you know, who I am and what I contribute, and the fact that we have people who want to stifle that or who want to persecute people for being who they are, not the democracy, not the America that I want to be in, and I'll do everything I can to change that.
Yes. Very good. Thank you.
Is that it, Mike? Oh, wait, Sarah's got a question. If people want to know more about the campaign or get involved, go to brennanforwi.com. There's also a Facebook of that stuff. My kids tell me what to do on Instagram and X, and they watch and they tell me when we've done something there, and that's all great. But like, and if there's a plea that I have, and we're going to stick around and have individual conversations here too, but like, the only way I know how to do this is by taking relationships that I have invested in over the course of the last 55 years. In some ways, I'm 55 years old, but 30 years or 35 years in a professional life, and then having those kind of extend in concentric circles out from there. Having Susan and Mike do this today is a part of that. To the extent you know other people, or you want to get involved, or you know people who live other parts of the state, and you want to share those with us, I welcome that. It's the only way, ultimately, where you build the kind of movement that it takes to win in this. And so again, I want to say thank you for letting me be here. I'm going to get out of the way of the water and grab some myself and have conversation with people for a little longer. So,
thank you.
I'm on the county board.
Stevens Point, Whitewater, Racine have gone to a referendum in the last couple of years to pay for firefighting.
You mean the red hats?
Like, that's not an extravagance.
Yeah,
that's
make
like
it a lot of reasons.
It was after I left, but there was a little movement on the shared revenue stuff 2 years ago. But like, people thought that got passed, it didn't really fix it.
Okay, so it's not shared money.
Cities.
I don't know if I would put it, because it might get like different size. But it's not that. It's not like that. Yeah, we've been a few times.
So most postcards have that and I tell them I'm American, that votes for the Democrats. So if you get along better with the Democrats and the Republicans, and work together,
I have to tell you, like, this is part of what's exciting to me is I think this having very thin margins is where policy gets done. Like, you know, people can stand in the way and like have feet of clay, but I just think that, like, that's what's exciting now is you're forcing, you know, people to do stuff in that middle space. And I like, some people want to be on the 80-20. Like, I'd like to be on the 49 if you want to drag people across. So that, like, that's, I think, who we should be. Like, and you had the chance to do stuff and where
she's making,
and that's the way we have to do this. So if you're still going to stick around on the county board, if I win this, my guess is you're going to be on the air. He's got my number. That's important to know. You want to make sure they know that. I welcome, I don't know if she came around or if you have a way either to mic me, I'd love to get a chance. All right, thank you.
Which I think opens up opportunities. I think there's ways that we can do things
differently.
Otherwise, it's new.
Thanks for coming together. Thank you very much.
This is a good guy. He's also a trout fisherman.
So again, rather than a specific policy, there are many things that we can make much more progress on than he was able to make. Because like, his job was to stand in the way of lots of bad stuff, and he did it with a great, successfully, right? And like, but I think that there's, Mike was saying that, and I talk to him sometimes, and his phone will cut out. Like, you know, there's still problems here, you know, with that kind of, like, we should be able to make investments like that, and there's money at the federal level to do it. You know, there's, I think, efforts for us to do things on Broadway and that we just have had been stifled.
You just go around and tell them all, what are you doing that's so gorgeous?
Oh, all right. I can see from here how great you're doing.
Thank you.
I do a lot of the other stuff for Grant Jones. And wow, got my vote.
Thank you.
I am really glad. I'm Lisa's assistant, and I'm really glad I got to be here with her for this. You are not on the radar in the office. And I talked to Sarah and did that change as fast as possible and found out you are set up with college domes and platforms. Hooray. And I'm going to get to our social media person today and see if they can help.
Great. Great. All I can do is kind of keep after this. So, you know, I've only been at it for, I guess it's almost 3 months now. It's almost 90 days. But every day that comes off the calendar is another one that gets closer.
I'm trying to get that name recognition. It's great. You're great filming. We can do it. I'm going to take the rest of the Western. Yeah.
Trying to find efficient ways. So what's your background?
I'm an Army veteran. I got done with my time and did the mom thing. I have special needs, two special needs kids, raised four, and now have adopted my six-year-old autistic ADHD grandson, and so I'm doing that. A lot of different things, event coordination,
So the old adage, you want something done, give it to a busy person. You're that.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, Mike, the having a grandson that you're now raising. I look forward to that day. You know, my kids are 18 and 20. I think we still got a little time, and I will look forward to those days. But I also. I know every grandparent who says they love having those kids around, they love also handing it back, and you don't have that.
Yeah, and now, I don't have that. My daughter-in-law said, I'm kind of worried because by the time you got done with the day, you're ready to go home and sleep. How are you doing? It's like, I don't know, just sleep.
You find that wellspring.
Yes. And so it's a different quality that I want to put more time in. It's just my pain.
And how is that going?
No,
I don't like. So there's the state party, the Senate Dems have done, made their fiat. Yes.
And I really loved it.
And I just don't like. As you can probably imagine, I'm looking around at everything else, and so I don't see that. But I also like if somebody did that in my race, and put their I would feel that's a little, and to do it way in advance sometimes seems a little bit putting the cart before the horse. But.
Yeah, and it's alienated a lot of folks that have.
But I'll tell you, I mean, you know this, and it's, again, and selfishly, the more that people are going out and voting in a Democratic primary, better for Democrats and better for all of us. Like, let's get people engaged.
And it is so different right now. We've said to people, all three of the women candidates right now for Senate 17 will be great options. I think Lisa has the most well-rounded background to handle it. Kareem, oh my
child care immediately. Like, they always have been interested in K-12 education, but now in lots of places they understand the connection not only to K-12 but to workforce that, you know, the lack of viable child care has on everybody. And Wisconsin is nice to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for coming today. And we're going to see more of each other coming up.
I hope so. Yeah. I'm so stoked for Sunday with the data center event.
I don't know what I'm doing on Sunday. I might be, you know.
Come on down.
All right.
All right. A couple quick follow-ups to what I was hearing, and I just want to clarify if I heard it right.
Yeah.
So one of the things I heard you talk about was National Guard potentially out of uniform at polling locations.
Yes.
How would that work, and what would their purpose be? Would you need an official declaration to call them up? Or?
So this is what happened in 2020. I think what has to happen is you have to exhaust every option locally and make sure that, you know, just as we do in for 1,800 units of government and all around the state, do whatever you can to get locals, the people who work year in and year out. But when there are times where there are extraneous circumstances, whether there be, you know, more people coming in to vote or not enough people, this is what the governor did in 2020 during the COVID challenge. And so it's having people who are not in uniform, but as civilians doing work in their own communities. And so it's, there is precedent for it. Again, but I want to make sure that you understand, nobody's in uniform. These are people who are in communities. There are 10,000 guard men and women in our state who are doing work in their own communities. This seems to be like a big deal.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just waving at me. I don't know. Maybe there's a parade.
Maybe it's a parade. They're doing
something. Look at this. They brought out a parade for me.
They must be going to state. Some.
Did they hear that this was not the real governor and just, they get confused here?
There we go.
What is this? Look, oh, they're on their way to state, is my guess, for basketball or something, right?
Yeah, he's wrestling with that last week.
Yeah. All right. So that's what that was. I thought that was all for me. That was an escort for them.
And I want to get some clarification on the data center.
Yeah.
Before you talk about putting a pause and
yep.
a follow-up question.
Yep.
What authority would the governor have outside of working with the legislature, obviously?
You know, I think that's something to be explored. Somebody asked a follow-up question about what the authority that the governor has right now. And I think this is all making sure that there is a rational and thoughtful approach. And when I say a pause, it's also not something that I'm looking to do for time immemorial. I think that there are ways that we can very quickly, in the first weeks of the next session, address these things, address the environmental concerns, address the concerns that taxpayers have, ensure that there is the level of accountability and responsibility that gets pushed down to the local level to ensure that there are the conversations that are happening there. And I think that's who we need to be, and that's the way the state needs to be a leader on this issue.
So one of the other things that we're looking at is kind of the overlap in this time period between the candidates getting out there, but also the Supreme Court race going on. Are you seeing questions pop up? Are they seeing crossover? Are these kind of working in tandem at the same time?
Well, I think so. I think it's been interesting, and that the level of engagement in this Supreme Court race has been so much less than there has been because the stakes are not as high. The majority is not at risk. But everybody who's engaged in electoral politics now is very invested in the Supreme Court race. I have gone to a number of Chris Taylor events. My wife was at one in my stead earlier this week. I'll be at one in Sheboygan tomorrow. So there is a level of intensity around those that is building. And since the election is less than 5 weeks away, I think people are really starting to pay attention. But resources matter, and there haven't been the level of resources spent on this campaign for the Supreme Court as there have been in the last several. And so I think you just get that level, the level of engagement from voters is a little bit less as well. But, people will make up their mind in the next few weeks. And I think we, as somebody who's a supporter of Chris Taylor, I'm going to be encouraging people just like we did. We put our sign up in the window just this week. And so I want to make sure that people are engaged in that race as well.
Is there a benefit to having maybe an early test run of get out the vote activity right now so that going into the fall, if the people are still activated, engaged, like carrying over the enthusiasm from one race to another?
I would think that it's always a good idea that we make sure that we're, you know, in ensuring that there is that level of engagement and organization. But I also will tell you, and you probably see this, I see it wherever I go, we have a highly engaged electorate. There are Democrats who are thirsty for somebody who can stand up to Donald Trump, but also who has a vision of where things are going and ultimately wants to roll up their sleeves and get something done. That's what I'm trying to demonstrate to people as I'm out talking to them. But clearly, this is an engaged electorate, people who want to make sure that we are doing the right level of organizing to be ready for this fall.
So another question that came up had to do with the awareness of, like, 65% aren't aware of the candidates. People aren't really fully locked in to have an opinion yet. They may have heard some names, but nowhere near deciding a choice. What kind of line do you walk when you have a crowd like this that is engaged? They have made up their minds, or they're actively doing so, but trying to say, just be patient. Does it make sense for me to go up on the air and start running a bunch of ads right now? Like, how do you walk that line to keep them excited, but let them know, like, you're out of the ordinary for the energy you already have?
Yeah, and as much as anything, I want to talk to engaged people now, and I want to talk to engaged people as it gets closer to the election. So it's a gift to have a group of 30 or 35 people who are this engaged, who have the level of information that they have about important issues, the, you know, the depth that they have. Like, that's valuable for me. It's valuable for what's going on statewide. And, like, as much as anything, I'm still introducing myself. You know, as I said, if I changed my name to Undecided, I'd have this, you know, going away, because 65% of the people haven't done that. But for me, I'm not going to spend a lot of time doing anything except trying to demonstrate to people I've got a career of executive experience. I had the highest appointed official, or the highest appointed cabinet position in the Evers administration, and that I have demonstrated that I'm somebody who wants to problem solve, in addition to standing up to what's going on and what's wrong at the federal level. I think we need to make sure that we are showcasing that there's a vision for where we want to go. And when I have an audience to do that, that's what I'm going to try to do.
All right. Anything else you want to add?
I don't think so.
All right. Good to catch
up. You look great. You look terrific. I hope that as we see each other additionally on the campaign, that we're in our civilian garb.